Welcome to The Backbone, a journey inside finance at a startup. I'm your host, Shubham Datta, at Shubham on Twitter. On The Backbone, we're obsessed with finance and operations at startups. We take a close look at finance functions within various startup companies by talking to finance leaders that are in there day in and day out. We chat startup finance, metrics, operations, and everything in between. I'm thrilled to welcome to the show today, Daniel Israelson, VP Finance and Operations at Firmex. As Vice President of Finance and Operations, Daniel is responsible for overseeing all support functions, including information systems and analytics, through to finance and accounting. Prior to joining Firmex, Daniel spent 8 years at PwC in both Canada and the US as both an auditor and consultant. Daniel is a graduate of the Ivy Business School at Western University and is a chartered accountant. So enough from me, time to bring in Dan, VP Finance and Operations at Firmex. Dan, thanks so much for joining me on The Backbone today. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. So prior to Firmex, you were at PwC for 8 years. Talk to me about your journey to Firmex and how that all happened.
Sure. No, it'd be great. First of all, thanks very much for having me on the show. Very excited to help out with this great initiative. So a bit about me. I started off my career at PwC right out of undergrad, which I did at the Ivy Business School. Spent a bunch of time in a bunch of different roles in a few different countries. Primarily worked in the Toronto, New York offices. Started off in the audit practice and then moved through from various consulting and ultimately into some tax planning, tax structuring type work. And what was really interesting about that experience is it gave me a phenomenal exposure to lots of different businesses at various stages of kind of their life cycle, and really helped me underpin my belief that consulting wasn't for me. Yeah, a great time. So when I was, starting to look for that opportunity outside of the firm, and really looking for something that I could get excited about and engaged, I was looking for something in the Toronto area, because that's where I live, and something that had a great story, had a great team, had a great product, and had a bit of a trajectory already. Came to Firmex with a really interesting opportunity to kind of take on a leadership role in the finance and operations side of the business. Ran with that. It's been a phenomenal experience in the sense that I got to come in here, take a, relatively early stage. At the time I joined, they've been around about 8-9 years as well, and help take it to that next stage, which is it becoming this kind of mid-sized company and really figuring out what that means for a business.
Right. So tell me a little bit about, we'll get into, I guess, what Firmex does, but when you started at Firmex, how big was the team? How big is it now? Talk to me a little bit about that aspect.
Sure. Of course. So from the core finance perspective, when I joined the company, we had one temp accounting person. Mm-hmm. And that person was responsible from everything from AP, AR, financial statements, tax reporting, managing the audit, like literally anything and everything in a finance side.
Right. But
fortunately, it's a simple business and it's a relatively small business. So it was manageable for that person. And when they needed it, they'd pull in other people as they could. Now we've grown the team to 3 people with some open headcount as well. So hopefully we'll be turning that into about a 4 or 5 person team over the next 6 months.
Cool.
Including myself. So that's just on the finance side. And then on top of that, we've had a great opportunity in the operations side to look at other areas of the business. We had a really great business intelligence and analytics team, which is part of the operations function. And we have an opportunity to grow that a little bit and really drive a lot of value for the business, as well as bringing some people in our business operations team to help better analyze and understand other elements of the business and help the various department leaders better operationalize some of their initiatives. So a lot of growth, a lot of really interesting stuff. And the whole idea being that, we were kind of bootstrapping it, really lean operations. But as you grow, you have to evolve and you have to become something meatier in order to deal with a meatier business. So really exciting times, really fast evolution over the last few months.
Nice. That's awesome. And so you touched on this a little bit, but so let's dive into what is Firmex? What does Firmex do? Maybe you could tell me a bit more about that.
Sure. Well, Firmex is one of those great Canadian startup stories that you never hear of. And there's tons of them out in the market. And because...
Until now.
Until now. And the reason I say that is it's very lightly funded, if at all, like many of these companies. They don't sell for massive multiples because they're real strong businesses providing products, often on a B2B, but sometimes on a B2C basis. And it operates in this great ecosystem of Toronto, but behind the scenes. So what Firmex is a secure document collaboration company. We focus primarily on three sub-areas of that. One is M&A due diligence, litigation, and compliance activities. And what that means is when a company is looking either to sell itself or interact with a third party outside of their firewall, outside of their network, they need to share confidential documents. We provide a platform and a tool to allow them to do that with tons of security and really just the certainty of knowing that those, you know, that secret sauce of theirs is not going to go disappear into cyberspace. So we've been really successful with that. Sell our product really throughout the world. Our biggest market is obviously the United States, but we're very much a Toronto company. 100% of our employees are in Canada. Of that, 98% are in the Toronto area. So really, really great, you know, Toronto success story where our founders came together with a really interesting product, raised a really small angel round, and from there self-funded the business, which is why you don't hear about us because we were never out doing big deals up until this past year.
Right. Yeah. And we'll get into that a little bit. So Firmex is in the deals business. The deals business is providing virtual data rooms, like you said, to M&A transactions. So I'm curious, you know, once a deal is finished, that data room gets archived and the customer stops paying for Firmex. And so until the next time they do an M&A deal, which the company itself, if they're acquired, then it may not be their decision to decide which data room provider they use. It's more likely their parent. Anyways, so given this dynamic, how does Firmex think about a concept like churn? I'm assuming Firmex has some sort of SaaS model, their pricing. So churn is a big thing. And so given that dynamic, how do you think about churn in the business?
Yeah, no, of course. It's a great question and a really interesting note. We actually debate a lot here how to think about churn because, like you say, within a SaaS business, one of your key drivers is your customer retention, which is really just the inverse of churn. To your point with the core, what probably is the best way to do it is to separate our business out. We've actually been really successful in running, I would say, two very similar but parallel business streams. And now it's the same product, it's the same service, it's the same everything, but the buying behavior of our customers is very different. And that causes some interesting differences, particularly around the churn retention model. We have our core business, or one of our core businesses, which you rightly identified is that M&A. I'm selling my business. Let's do the deal, get it done. And when the deal's over, the data room's over, and thanks very much. And we had fun and goodbye. And to your point, exactly. If you sell your business, you're probably never selling your business again, unless you do another startup, which hopefully we see that. That business, the way we talk about it, we call it our transaction business because it's very transactional. You know, we don't manage that to a churn number. That we really worry about cost of acquisition because we know it's primarily a one-time deal. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of other attributes of that business, which make it really attractive. We talk about the virality, the fact that you're inviting lots of other people in to use our product.
Right. So it kind of has aspects of a consumer thing there where you're like, you invite all these people into the data room. They may not have heard of Firmex before. Then they start using the product and they're like, oh, this is pretty cool. Maybe I'll use this on other deals. Because you're inviting, you know, legal counsel, advisors, and all of these kinds of people. So I guess that's the virality you're talking about or something else?
That's exactly what we're talking about. So from that perspective, so that creates a lot of value to us outside of just the core kind of price that you pay for consuming our data room for your deal, but obviously doesn't drive any kind of second purchase from the initial buyer.
Right.
So from that perspective, we look at that business and that's, like you say, is almost consumer. And that's why we call it a transactional business because we do one transaction with you and we say thanks very much and walk away. Everybody walks away happy, right? Customers got a lot of value from our product. We had a great economic relationship with them. And we feel that we've, you know, socialized this product with potentially a whole new group of users. So we also think there's some long-term value there too. But not in the way you think about churn. Now, the other piece of our business, which has actually been our larger business over time, we call it our subscription book, and that's much more of a traditional SaaS model. And we're being successful with that is that's a company that says, Firmix, you've got a great product for allowing me to share documents either in a due diligence and a compliance and a litigation setting with lots of third parties. But I don't want to have to go and I do this on a regular basis, whether I'm an investment bank, a law firm, an accounting firm, a corporate dev team, or even just a general corporate. And they need to share documents with lots of people. And they say, you got a great product to do it. I want to use you regularly. And I want to use you for multiple reasons. So maybe that's my corp dev team's going to use you for our M&A activity. And my accounting team's going to use you for our financial statements audits to communicate with our auditors. Or maybe it's a law firm that says we're doing M&As and we're doing litigation. And we want to use you to share documents with all those third parties. And those customers come to us. And what they do is they buy a subscription. Plain and simple. And those are really worry about churn, and we manage churn. And that's a very kind of simple and traditional churn retention analysis, because we're looking at customers and we're saying, how are you using our product? Are you getting value at it? And how can we help you use it more and more efficiently?
That is really
the fundamental basis about managing the churn on that business. So it becomes a really interesting dynamic, because what you have in our business now is we're a SaaS business. Everything's a subscription, buying the same product, but you have these two unique user bases that are consuming the product in a different way, and you have to think about constantly, are we talking to all these people in the same way and in the right way? So it becomes a very interesting, really interesting, really fun kind of dynamic in terms of figuring out those two business lines.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, you've got a subscription piece and then a kind of transactional or one-time revenue model as well, just given the two sides of the users that are using it. So then I want to dig into a little bit more on the churn side, on the subscriptions. Given churn, some churn is controllable churn, some churn is uncontrollable churn. How do you think about those two aspects? Like, I'll give you an example. Like, for instance, in a different space, let's say an e-commerce enablement platform, if they're helping, you know, small mom and pop shops get online, that business can have churn in two ways. One, that customer just decides to move to another platform, or that business, that small mom and pop shop, just shuts down. And then that's out of the control of the enablement platform. So it's uncontrollable churn. So is there any aspect of that, how you look at churn in terms of controllable and uncontrollable for Firmix?
Of course. When we look at the churn, I think it would be irresponsible for us not to really understand why, and I'll talk about it, the good and the bad, why customers are leaving us and why customers are coming to us. And when we look at why customers are leaving us from a churn and retention perspective, understanding whether it's a junior miner who got really hurt by the commodity bust over the last few months, and literally the business disappeared. They were using us for communicating with investors, for certain compliance filings, for even just as a repository to store some of their kind of complex kind of mine plans. And they disappear because fundamentally, you know, the business just went bankrupt. So understanding that is for sure essential. And the metrics we look at that on are, you know, obviously controlled and uncontrolled being the big banners, but within those, obviously, there's variability, right? Is it, did the business go bankrupt? Did a competitor come in with a better offering or more tailored offering? What we're seeing sometimes in some of the spaces, legal being a great example, is that there are providers that have focused legal platforms, whereas we're a platform that people use us across industries, and that provides a lot of value to certain customers. Some customers want something that's really industry focused. And understanding if a customer is just leaving us for one of those products is very useful. And also that becomes very useful when we start thinking about how we kind of iterate and develop the next generation of our product, and understanding what customers are important to us. So, of course, understanding the reasons why customers churn and understanding sometimes there's even good churn. There's certain customers that are just not worth the hassle.
You know, they eat up a lot of your support resources, and it just doesn't make sense from the standpoint of keeping them on. Just doesn't justify having them around.
We are a running joke here always, and I'm sure a lot of your future guests will say the same thing. Your smallest customers take up way more time than some of your large.
Yeah, it's this whole concept of like a quote unquote firing a customer because they're just not worth your while. And it's different because, you know, in the past and even today, you know, the old adage is that the customer is always right. But yeah, that might be the case, but they may not be a good customer for you just because they're just consuming all these support resources. Resources and whatnot.
No, 100%. The customer's always right, but sometimes you want to be wrong. So,
yeah, that's a good way to put it. Moving on to you touched on this a little bit in the beginning. Recently, NovaCap, one of Canada's largest or leading private equity funds, invested into Firmex. And so, prior to that, like you said, Firmex, founded in 2006, had raised just about $5 million in venture capital funding, if that. And so now, having a private equity player like NovaCap on the cap table and part of the business, what has that been like? What is it now like to have operating a PE backed company? And what does it mean for the finance team and for your team at Firmex?
Sure. No, that's a great thing. And the transaction with NovaCap was a great point in kind of Firmex's history. Something really, really excited about. Like you said, phenomenal institution, being around for decades, primarily based out of Montreal, but they have a presence in Toronto. Great mm-hmm. team and great track record in helping companies take what they're really good at, making it more efficient, more effective, and scaling it up to becoming the next level. And part of that is coming in and helping us bring in the discipline, both from an operating and finance perspective, to take us to that next level. So I talked a bit before about how, you know, when you think about it, the journey or evolution of a company from kind of seed early stage all the way through to Google or Apple.
Sure. Yeah.
One of those. That journey requires a lot of inflection points mm-hmm. where the company's really got to make choices and they've got to make decisions. They've got to make investments in the business in order to prepare themselves and be ready to kind of handle the complexities that come with getting bigger and bigger and bigger. As I said, when I came in here, that was one point where the company said we want to professionalize kind of the finance operations team, bring it up so that it's scaled kind of comparably with the rest of the business. We sure. did a phenomenal job on really running an efficient and well-organized sales, marketing, technology, operations. And now there was a point where to say, let's take the back office and let's do the same thing. With mm-hmm. the transaction with NovaCap was just the next step in that evolution. It was an opportunity for us to say, you know, we've built a phenomenal business. We've got a lot of runway. We've got a lot of opportunity to grow. Let's bring a partner that's done this before. Let's got bring it. Somebody in that can help us ask the right questions, can help us brainstorm the right answers to take us from this, I'll call it small, mid-sized company, where we're kind of on that cusp of that, and make us into that solidly mid-market technology company and on the right track to become, you know, hopefully one day a large-scale technology company.
Right.
So it was a great opportunity to do that. NovaCap has been a great partner in doing that because they've seen lots of businesses. Now, mm-hmm. when we talk about the finance function, for me, it's a huge opportunity to sit there and deal with people that, like I said, have seen it before, have done it before, and can bring real experience to say, this is how we do it over here, or this is how we did it in this company, and really help us figure out the right choices and decisions we make as we kind of grow our team from a finance perspective, as we put the right tools in place, as we put the right operating procedures in place, and really help us along that journey to being that mid-market tech company that is really a household name, or at least a yeah. Canadian success story that people hear of.
Right, right. And so I want to dive into a bit more on just being private equity backed. So and the various stages, right? So as a bootstrap company, or even prior to you joining Firmex, finance may have just been an afterthought, or it was just it is what it is, and it's just there. And then you got involved, and then built some scaled that function. And so now with a private equity player like NovaCap here, and then obviously as companies get larger and larger, and you mentioned the likes of Google and Apple, like public companies, you increase the kind of reporting requirements and disclosure and things like that. So Have you found that to be like, has that been a welcoming site for you, or it's like just more work, or like maybe you can talk to a little bit about that?
Great point. And I think what it is all of those things. It is definitely more work. It mm-hmm. is definitely a welcome site. And it is definitely an opportunity for us to say, we have to, if we want to be the type of company we believe we can be, what are the things we need to be doing? And how do we do those? And absent of a professional owner, absent of a public market, there isn't the onus and the pressure to really streamline, operationalize, and really deliver that high quality financial reporting that future buyers or the public mm-hmm. markets eventually may want from us. So it's really great opportunity. It is a lot of work, and taking a company that has been bootstrapped to very closely held to private equity owned, that transition is challenging. And, mm-hmm. and it's challenging because the needs of a company that is trying to figure out if it's going to make payroll next month to the needs of a small company that's got the owner managers in their day-to-day are very different. And those two are very different in themselves. But those two are vastly different to what professional investors are looking for, mm-hmm. and the type of analysis and understanding of the financial statements. And it's really the interesting part for me is taking that step back and making sure you're always looking at it from these perspectives. Because oftentimes what will happen is you get the requests and the questions, and it's challenging. It's a lot of work, and you're trying to manage a business day to day and help the business run, but you also have this more of a reporting burden. And that's part of that catalyst for us growing our team so much is dealing with that. But it's stepping back and saying, like, why do these people need this? Like, why do they care? Right. They think we're doing a good job. And the truth is, they're just not here day to day. They don't see the order bell ringing. They don't see the cash in the bank. And mm-hmm. the same way that someone investing in a public security doesn't see it.
Right, right.
So, you know, going through that process and getting up to snuff or getting up to that required level is just, it's challenging. It's a lot of work. From my perspective, very welcome and necessary. It's something that I'm really excited to be a part of in helping the company evolve down that next stage of that life cycle.
Right, right. And, you know, as product evolves, as the company's sales and marketing evolves, it's important for, I guess, the finance function to also evolve and scale with that. So that's really neat. And so this leads well into the next question I had, which was, so in your opinion, like, what is the importance of the finance function at an early stage and now, I guess, growth stage company, technology company in particular?
Of course. So I think the finance function is a fascinating function, and I'm sure everybody will
bias.
Say that. Yeah, exactly. Everybody will say that about their functional area. No, but I think it's a fascinating function when you talk about early stage or high growth or growing technology or even kind of brick and mortar companies, because when you start off, your finance function is really a necessary evil. Right. Even if you've got a bit of venture funding and you've got some, you know, outside investors that are curious about what's going on, but it's really a necessary evil because what is it doing? It's taking resources away from your two core activities, which is building a product and selling the product.
Right.
But as you grow, you start more and more value starts to come out of that finance function, because as you get away from that, are we going to make payroll? Do we have product market fit? Are we actually a real business? But once you've proven that out, the finance function, I would argue, goes on a really fast hockey stick curve of value add, because it goes from this necessary evil of making sure our vendors are paid, our employees are paid,
right,
and that we have enough cash in the bank, to being something that helps us really think about the business strategically. It starts off, from my perspective, as providing the data to let the owner managers, let the sales and potentially the technology people really understand the business and make the right decisions as they scale it up. And as you continue to grow up that spectrum, it really provides the opportunity to have that strategic insight. It's one of the few positions within the business outside of really the C-suite. And when I say the C-suite, it's really just the CEO that has a view of everything going on and has that opportunity to wrap their arms around the company and say, what does this all mean? And particularly as you grow and you're not all sitting across from each other, that becomes more and more and more important. And it's that opportunity there where finance creates a lot of value for businesses, because it's the one person that's able to see what the left and the right hand are doing, and to help provide advice to the other decision makers in the business to say, well, here's what he's doing and here's what she's doing, and how do we make sure everything's aligned and we're all appropriately driving to that shared goal of success.
So it seems like what you're saying is like it's really the connection between everything else, like making sure that sales and marketing kind of speak the same language in terms of if, like we talked about customers before, you know, if you see a certain cohort of customers just doesn't make sense, and marketing keeps, marketing to those types of customers, you can kind of step, or your team can step in and say, hey guys, it's not worth our while to market to those types of customers because it's just not worth it. Is that what,
exactly, what you're... Exactly. Yeah. So as you grow, you start to see more of those opportunities. When I look at that life cycle, when everybody's in the same floor, the same space, everybody knows what everybody's doing. In fact, people are wearing multiple hats and probably doing it all. But as you're growing, exactly that. The opportunity to sit down with the marketing team and say, you know what, we have this cohort that's just got terrible churn, or it's just chewing up so much of our support resources. It's just not profitable. You know, how do we pivot our marketing towards this profitable cohort and having that discussion? Or sitting down with the sales team and helping them understand, you know, the implications of some of the pricing decisions that they make.
Right.
And what that means from a margin perspective. And, you know, you can't give away the store just to close a deal because that has downstream implications to the entire company. We're working with the technology team and understanding to say, you know, you've got your development plan, but what is it actually costing us to develop this feature? And what is the return we're going to expect to see on that feature? And does it make sense to invest all that, you know, agile team's time or all those developers' time in developing that? Because maybe that doesn't actually incrementally grow the business, right? It's cool, it's neat, but it's not necessarily that growth piece. And it's bringing all those together to create a lot more value to the business. And then the other piece is, I find, at least from a lot of the CFOs I talk to and the VP finances, is when you talk with the CEOs, oftentimes the CEO is a very lonely job. You're sitting at the top of a pyramid and you don't have a peer group. You know, you've got your other C-suite or your vice presidents below you who are looking out for your guidance. But I find the CFO ends up being, because they have this view of the business, the one person that can actually act as a sounding board and engage in those strategic discussions with the CEO, because they also have that same picture that they're looking at.
What you're saying is the finance function is essentially the backbone. I want to hop in now to a quick fire round. So the way this works is I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. You have 10 seconds to respond to that. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
All right, let's do it. So your go-to online resource for all things startup finance related, what do you go to?
Google is probably the first stop, but I think I end up on Investopedia more often than not when I've got the quick question. And the other one is just my personal network. Just firing out an email to a few people.
Nice. Your favorite productivity hack?
Flags in my inbox. So I can
Multiple colors? You do the whole nine yards?
Do the whole nine yards. Yeah.
Cool. And last one. One thing that you don't leave the office before finishing?
My to-do list for the next day.
Interesting. Okay. So you get through your to-do list, like check all that off, and then what you're kind of coming up to do tomorrow, you want to have that fleshed out before you leave?
I would love to say that I check it all off. Most of the things get just ported to the next day, but that's basically it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Dan. This has been a lot of fun chatting, talking a little bit about Firmex, your journey, and some of the little intricate details of, you know, what makes finance so unique. And especially at a company like Firmex.
Oh, great. Appreciate the time and happy to be a part of this.
Awesome. Thanks.